Rajana Raja Chalaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Raja Chalaranjana. Yamuna Tira Bonachari. Yamuna Tira Bonachari. Hari Jayo Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Jayo Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Jayo Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Charya Tattva Tattva Sisya Madhya Sabhaṁ Grīs Tita Nika Sāmiya Vai Chandana Vinaya Bhakti Vedanta Sāmi Sīla Prabhupāt Ki Jaya Vishnu Pāda Pura Mangsa Paribhārādika Charya Tattva Tattva Sisya Madhya Sabhaṁ Grīs Tita Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Kuta Sāmi Sīla Prabhupāt Thakur Ki Jai Anantra Kuli Vaisna Vinda Ki Iskan Bibi Vandu Charya Sīla Prabhupāt Ki Nama Charya Sīla Hari Rash Thakur Ki Premsa Gursi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Sri Adaiti Gadadha Arsi Vasari Gaura Bhakti Vinda Ki Sri Sri Vyada Krishna Gopaka Banachyam Kunrara Kuni Giri Gopuran Ki Sri Namanamutra Ram Ki Sri Navadip Maya Puram Ki Sri Jagannath Puri Ram Ki Ganga Mai Jamuna Mai Ki Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Akutim ruche pradad Api bratrimatim nripa Putrika dharmam ashritya Shatarupanu moditaha Akutim ruche pradad Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Akuti had two brothers, but in spite of her brothers, King Svayambhuvamanu handed her over to Prajapati Ruchi on the condition that the son born of her be returned to Manu as his son. This he did in consultation with his wife, Shaktarupa. Purport. Sometimes a sonless person offers his daughter to a husband on the condition that his grandson be returned to him to be adopted as his son and inherit his property. This is called Putrika Dharma, which means that by execution of religious rituals, one gets a son, although one is sonless by one's own wife. But here we see extraordinary behavior in Manu, for in spite of his having two sons, he handed over his first daughter to Prajapati Ruchi on the condition that the son born of his daughter be returned to him as his son. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur comments in this connection that King Manu knew that the Supreme Personality of Godhead would take his birth in the womb of Akuti. Therefore, in spite of having two sons, he wanted the particular son born of Akuti because he was ambitious to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead appear as his son and grandson. Manu is the lawgiver of mankind, and since he personally executed the Putrika Dharma, we may accept that such a system may be adopted by mankind also. Thus, even though one has a son, if one wants to have a particular son from one's daughter, one must give one's daughter in charity on that condition. That is the opinion of Srila Jiva Goswami. Akutim ruchaye pradad api bratrimatim nripaha putrika dharmam ashritya shatrupanu moditaha. Translation. Akuti had two brothers, but in spite of her brothers, King Svayambhuvamanu handed her over to Prajapati Ruchi on the condition that the son born of her be returned to Manu as his son. This he did in consultation with his wife Shatrupa. So just reading this, I was reminded in Ramayana, there is a sort of similar situation described, only in involves a daughter instead of a son being handed back to the grandfather. This was involving a daughter that Maharaj Romapad, who was a great friend of Dasarath, Maharaj Dasarath, who was Lord Ramachandra's father. So Maharaj Dasarath had a daughter, and Maharaj Romapad was sonless, was without child actually, and wanted to have a nice child to raise. So out of friendliness, then Maharaj Dasarath, he gave her, his friend Romapad his own daughter. So, and here we have another situation whereby a father gives a daughter to a boy, to son-in-law, on the condition that their son be returned to him. So what does this mean? What lesson can we take from this? Because this is, of course, the ways of Vedic culture, the ways of very exalted personalities, kingly, aristocratic, Kshatriya families. They have many cultural habits, which, of course, we cannot imitate now. Like, for example, a king might have more than one wife. Mentioning Maharaj Dasarath, he had three wives. Of course, Krishna had 16,108 wives, and other great Maharajas were also known to have many, many wives. And not only wives, then every princess who would be married to that king, the princess would not come alone. She would have an entourage of maidservants. The women from lower caste families who were attached to this particular princess for
doing her hair and, you know, dressing her and all the things fluttering around the princess, making her very beautiful. And they become a permanent part of the princess's life. And she knows these women from when they were all children together. They grew up in the royal household of the father together like this. And so they're inseparable as friends. And so when the princess gets married, actually all these maidservants are also, it's not formally part of the marriage ceremony, but they're understood also to be the wives of the king too. So a king could have easily, he may have three wives or four wives or five wives officially as Kshatriya queens, but each one of them may have who knows how many maidservants, 10, 12, 15, 20, you see, depending on the background of the princess, very opulent. The background is very opulent, that means more maidservants. So anyway, this is something that, who can imitate that now? Said that in Vedic culture, if one was able to maintain many wives, then one may do it. It's permitted, but now people have trouble to maintain even a very simple household, one husband, one wife, one, two children. This already is a big tapasya to keep together. So my point is, obviously, there are many things that we will read in Srimad Bhagavatam or Mahabharata which we cannot do, which are not intended for us to follow. So then we have to try to extract a lesson from them for ourselves. And so the lesson that can be seen here, at least one, is the culture of detachment. And this is very interesting, actually, to consider, because we're talking about royal personalities. Manu, you see, they are Kshatriya category, rulers, kings. The Kshatriya, it is his dharma to be situated in opulence. You see, this is also something that's difficult for a lot of people today to understand. I remember this was one of the very first times I came to Romania to preach, and we did a program in I think it was Satu Mare, which is a northwestern Romania, near to Hungary. And so we were, these people had, they really knew zero about Krishna consciousness. You know, for them it was like, and we had our books. And so there was one young woman, and she was looking at the books, looking at the cover. And what she couldn't understand is all the personalities, they have big gold crowns and so many, necklaces and bracelets and jewels. And she couldn't understand this. She kept asking, what is this? Why are they dressed like that? Why so bright and shiny? And so it seemed to her to be so, maybe, I don't know, even suspicious. and I've actually then later on, and it was, I think it was in the same country, in Romania, in another city in Sibiu, also in the very early days, someone happened to show me an Orthodox catechism, means their, you know, book of their teachings, especially for young people. So they can learn what the Orthodox Christian philosophy and practice is all about, theology. And this was some thick book, and it was in English. It was an English translation, I think, of originally Romanian or something like that, one of these languages of the Orthodox Church. And one of the sections of the book was for criticizing other religions. So, and then I was looking in there, and they had actually a painting of Lord Vishnu lying on Antashesh, being his feet being massaged by Mother Lakshmi, Lord Brahma. There's a typical Indian poster you'll see. This picture was there, and I was reading the text, and the text was saying, this is supposed to be God. Just see the crowns and the jewels and all these things, and very critical of the opulence. And then they're going on to say Jesus was a poor man, and you know, walking barefoot and like this. So that for them is holiness, you see, austerity, tyaga. Anyway, my point is that many people have a hard time understanding how people in the royal order, who are saintly leaders of mankind, it is their dharma, it is their religious duty to be situated in opulence. Because, why? Because, as Shastra says, the king is Naradeva. Means that in human society, he is the representative of God himself. God among men, that's the meaning of this word Naradeva. Because the common people, they don't have a conception of God very clear. They may hear, hear narratives in the Shastras, that's there. But that's just a story, that the tendency is if you just hear a story and there's nothing visible, then the mind tends to categorize it as fable, children's tale, something, to help you go to sleep at night, but otherwise not very serious. So people need to see. They need to have presented before their senses a representation of the majesty, the authority, and the opulence of the Lord. And so the king, the Vedic king, he actually takes that post, which is interesting, because the Brahmanas who are really the Maya media to the Lord, they don't take that position of opulence. Brahmana is, his nature is to be renounced. But the king, he has that duty. So you see, Brahmana, Kshatriya, they're the highest orders of Varnashram. They're they have, Prabhupada explains, their duty in society, it is very interlinked. You see, a Kshatriya is a person who is, some Kshatriyas are practiced, some Kshatriyas actually are Brahmanas, the Raja Rishis. Means, and we actually find mentioned in this Srimad Bhagavatam of a Kshatriya family that became a Brahmana family, just, generation after generation. This Brahminical nature became stronger and stronger. And finally, the whole dynasty, which was formerly Kshatriya, was then accepted as Brahmanas. So Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are very, very close. Even the way they deal with one another, it is, all, of course, Kshatriyas show respect to the Brahmanas, but it is, you look carefully and you see it is more or less equality. Sometimes even the Kshatriya has duty to chastise the Brahmanas. Sometimes the Kshatriya is taking the superior position over the Brahmanas. The king also, when some important decision has to be made, he calls in his Brahmanas and hears from them. Everyone will give their opinion. This is the nature of Brahmanas. You see, five Brahmanas, five opinions. This is, and ISKCON is like that. As many Brahmanas you have, as many as opinions you have. So who's going to decide? Who's going to make the final? That's the king. So the king listens to all the Brahmanas, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then he says what will happen. And it may or may not be exactly what these Brahmanas have said. They have said different things. He may take one idea, he may combine several ideas, or he may think of another idea himself after hearing them. And he will say, that's the way it is. And everyone has to agree that the king has said. So you see this interlinking between Brahmana order and Kshatriya order. So this is interesting that both are representatives of God, the Brahmana as well as the Kshatriya, but they represent in different ways. So the Kshatriya, he has to assume opulence, he has to sit on a big throne, he has power, he has he has an army, he has servants, he has a great palace. And so what is he representing here? He's representing Vaikuntheshvara. He's representing the Lord of Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, who is the original king, transcendental king over the spiritual world. So, yet at the same time, following my thoughts on, about this purport, although the royal order is established in such opulence, at the same time, because they are highly cultured in Vedic knowledge and Vedic practice, therefore they are detached. And we can see the last stage of a king's life, vanaprastha. He leaves everything. He goes with his wife to the forest and they practice austerities together. And as we see in the narratives of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the king leaves his body fixed in remembrance of the Lord, and then the wife prepares the funeral pyre for him and lights it in the lonely forest, and then she also enters into the fire and goes with her husband back home, back to Godhead. So this detachment, at the same time as all this opulence is there, this detachment is also very, it is underlying the whole system. And so this is what we're seeing here, that Manu, he's making this condition. Yes, you take my daughter, have a son to Prajapati Ruchi, but give the son to me, because of knowing that this is will be the personality of Godhead appearing as the son of Akuti. And so Prajapati Ruchi is agreeing. And these other examples of sons or daughters being given to others for raising, this is showing the detachment that is there in the royal order at the same time as the opulence. And so how is this detachment there? Because of Krishna consciousness, because of God consciousness. Although they're established in opulence, that is their duty. They must do this. This is ordained in the Shastra. But they're not thinking that this is mine. This aham mameti, I and mine conception. This is to be discarded by those who are in the leadership positions in Varna Ashram Dharma Society. The more attached one is, then the more one is lower down. This Varna Ashram Society is made in such a way that according to one's qualities, then one naturally will fit at a certain level. So if one is very much attached, like people today, you see, very much attached to whatever they don't have, hardly anything anyway, compared to Vedic times, but they're very, very attached to that. And very, so this very strong attachment, unreasonable attachment, this is automatically then showing that one's quality, guna karma, is lower. So this is why Lord Krishna wanted Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas to rule the earth, because they, of all the kingly order, they were best established in Krishna consciousness, the Lord's confidential devotees. And they showed, we see in the Mahabharata that description, their detachment. They were prepared to live in the forest. They were prepared to live by begging. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, after the battle of Kurukshetra was fought, he was not eager, now the world is mine. like that you may have seen, it's famous, that film made back in the 1939 by Charlie Chaplin, The Great Dictator, where he was satirizing Adolf Hitler. with the mustache. It's a very funny film. And so you see one scene where he's got the globe of the earth in his hand and he's seizing it and it slips out from his hand and he's trying to hold it. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was not like, ah, the world is mine. No, actually we see in this Bhagavatam, his concern was for all the warriors and even the animals that had lost their life in the great battle. That was his concern when the battle was over. And so he went to perform penance and to hear from Bhishma Dev what is the Raj Dharma, what is the duty of a king. And this was the mood in which he took the authority, the throne of the earth, a mood of great regret at the violence that had to be committed in order for the political situation of the world to be rectified, a regret at the great loss of life, and very, very cautious that he should do his duty very properly. So this is detachment, and this is the natural quality of the pure devotee. And this is why Krishna wanted the Pandavas to be the rulers of the world. All right then, any questions? Yes?
You mentioned all these things about Varna Ashram and about Varna actually. And today people are doing, astrologers are doing calculations about Varna, about qualities of human Rakshasa and everything. But I know about some people, and for example, there are cases that some, and first of all, we are mostly born in Yavana. And the second of all, it is found that many of those who are by charge brahmanas never reading books, for example, never, they are not like sleeping all day, then there are rakshasas, sometimes very nice, soft-hearted people who are very helpful and open-minded and like that. And sometimes there are like demigods in category, they are like criminals and what you can say about that, because it's usually many things are working, but there are sometimes strange things.
Yeah, well, what I can say about that, you just said, usually things are working according to the system, but sometimes there are exceptions, and that's the way it is. That's the way of this material world. And also, it is variable, because that's the nature of the material world, ever-changing. Nothing is permanently fixed up. There are these different ages, so in the Kali Yuga, it's openly said, Kalo, what is that? Rakshashim Kalimashita, Jayanti Brahmani Onishu, that Rakshashas will take birth in Brahmana families. So these things are directly stated in the Shastras about this particular age. And even in previous ages, because mode of goodness was stronger, so things were more fixed up, but there were also exceptional cases. The birth of Hiranyaksha Hiranyakashipu is an example. So they are sons of Kasyapa, who's a great Brahmana, Prajapati. So they are Brahmanas themselves, but demons. So that is going on. Not much to say about it. That's just the way the world is. Yeah? Number two question.
Yes. About this example, because we're supposed to learn something from all these examples from for our literature, for your problems. What we should, how we can apply this example
of what?
Of Kubja. This
Kubja.
Kubja, this ugly woman who was attracted to
Krishna. Kubja is the incarnation of the material energy. She is Durga Devi, who has appeared in that form, Trivakra. Her name is in the Bhagavatam, also known as Kubja. So she is Durga Devi, who has appeared. And therefore, she has this particular sort of special kind of attraction to Krishna, which is tinged with
material sense gratification, because she's Durga Devi. Hmm? But still, Krishna accepted her as maidservant, and he purified her by his association. But the lesson there is that, comparing Kubja to the gopis' love for Krishna is pure, without any tinge of sense gratification or wanting something back. So the lesson is how much favor Krishna showed to Kubja, so how much more blessing there is from Krishna if a devotee is able to approach him purely. Krishna is so merciful. And there are this even more extreme example is Puttana, who actually came with the intention of killing Krishna. Kubja was not like that at all. She wanted to serve Krishna, but there's just some motive there. But Puttana came to actually to kill Krishna. But the way she designed to do it was to put Krishna on her lap and have him suck her breast like a mother. So Krishna sucked out her life, but she went to Vaikuntha and took up the Madhura Rasa, Vatsalya Rasa, entered the Rasa of motherhood in Krishna's eternal Leela. So how? There's also that in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that when this verse describing that from third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam was recited in the presence of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, then he went into such total ecstasy, thinking about the mercy of the Lord. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned about five brahmanas, five different opinions, and I remember His Grace Ravindra Swarupa Prabhu, he coined the phrase enlightened energy, like in ISKCON, we have that. Everybody who comes in, and starts chanting Hare Krishna, he says he's better than a brahmana, and my opinion is as important as anybody else. And in consequence, quite often, there's no authority. Everybody thinks he knows best, for whatever reason. So how we deal with that?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you have the answer.
No, actually, I don't really have an answer.
No, I mean...
Therefore, in my opinion, Srila Prabhupada did speak of the importance of Varnashram Dharma. So Srila Prabhupada, he came with the mission of, he said himself, to create a head of society, which means Brahmanas. Srila Prabhupada's intention was to bring up Brahmana class. And so that he has done in ISKCON, as you say, at least we can say there, ISKCON has many would-be Brahmanas. They would like to be Brahmanas. Whether they are or not, they really are. But that's the aspiration, to be a Brahmana. Prabhupada also, after that, that was his mission, but he also made that statement that only 50% of my work is done, and alluding to Varnashram Dharma. So, but this has to be done by Krishna. There should be a Kshatriya order. And the Kshatriyas bring order to this enlightened anarchy that you have mentioned. because that is their purpose. In Gita, Krishna says that he does this. Chaturvarnam Maya Shristam. He says, I am the one who establishes Varnashram. So, this is my opinion, you see. I have God brothers who say we should sit down and have meetings and, try to create Varnashram in ISKCON. I have really serious doubts that, as we say this, ISKCON is like, it's one legal entity with this type of mental disorder called multiple personality disorder. Like sometimes they say one person, he's occupying a body as a personality named Joe, and then it switches, and then he's Mary, and then he's Jim. And some of these people, they say, have 23 personalities inside. So
sometimes ISKCON looks like that to me. It's like one legal entity with multiple personalities, and you have to really check who's speaking, you know. The official statement comes out, you have to, which personality is this now? Because the next one may say completely opposite. So the Kshatriya brings order to this. Kshatriyas are even more rare than Brahmanas. A rarer type of person than a Brahman is. You can see in India they have so many Brahmanas, but no Kshatriyas, or very, very, very few if there are any. My opinion is that Krishna has to do this. Just as Krishna sent Srila Prabhupada to bring up the Brahmanas, so someone has to come to bring up the Kshatriyas. That may not sound so optimistic, but I think it's optimistic to depend on Krishna, to have faith in him. From what I've seen, and Krishna himself says, I create the Varnashram Dharma, so I can't see from some, you know, temple council meetings or regional board meetings or GBC meetings that we're going to get Varnashram out of this. Appoint, you are the Kshatriya now, you. Put a crown on your head. Yes.
Can we use that as the managers are the kshatriyas, and those who read a lot of books, they call the brahmanas, those who go out to summit, and they are called vaishyas. But is it actually, can we use this terminology for...
I think one gets into greater difficulty by trying to impose these kind of things on devotees. It's been tried, you know, there's those who have advocated that and maybe still advocate it, but devotees are devotees, you know, and I think more accurately, devotees, the whole trend of our culture in this movement is to become brahminical. Everyone's trying, whether they're or not they're, you know, completely successful at it, that's another thing. But the aim, the general aim, is to become like a Brahmana, these qualities. In ISKCON, we don't, you know, look around. We don't really have a culture for this hardcore, heavy manager. I mean, even manager in the sense today is not a Kshatriya role, actually. This is more of a Vaishya type role anyway. But either Kshatriya or Vaishya, where is that culture in this movement? You know, where do you see new devotees or kids being really trained rigorously? It's not. It's what is our training? We have Bhagavatam class, we have Gita class, you know, we learn verses. Everyone, and then it's just a question of, you know, according to your nature, how much you can follow that. But there's no other channel, you know. It's like, I only can go this far trying to be a Brahmana. Maybe I should, you know, now take the Kshatriya way. But there is no Kshatriya way. You know, there's no Kshatriya culture. There's no some, you know, castle on a mountaintop with real powerful Kshatriyas waiting. You want to be a Kshatriya? Come in here. And give him a sword, and we have no such thing, or Vaishya, you know, to get trained in business. There are in ISKCON some devotees who, by their nature, are good at business. And you know what they say? I'll quote one of my godbrothers, who's very successful down in Australia, running a business. I once asked him, who do you have working for you? You hire devotees? He said, no, I'd never hire devotees in my business. He said, they're the worst workers. He said, I hire, you know, karmis, people, they want to work. You know, that you say, be here at 9 o'clock, they're going to be here at 9 o'clock. You tell a devotee, be here at 9 o'clock, he'll call up at 11:30. Oh, we had a festival at the temple today. I'm sorry, Prabhu. I'll come in about 45 minutes, okay? And then he expects you, you know, he expects you to understand that and to pay him full time as if he had come at 9 o'clock. Prabhu, I'm a devotee. You know, that's what they say. And he said, but the business world doesn't work that way. You know? He said, my rule is I never hire devotees in my business. If I did, I'd go broke.
Dr. Ernst, you probably know him, he's a bookkeeper for like 30 years now, he's retired. And he says, yeah, your devotees will never become good managers. He said, because it's not your main focus. Your main focus is hearing and chanting.
Yeah.
And he said, when you want to be a good bookkeeper or manager, you know, that's your life.
Yeah.
That's your full meditation. Yeah. But a devotee, who wants to be meditating constantly on rows of figures?
I agree with that completely. Yeah, the general trend of devotees' life is towards Brahmanism, you know. But then there's the question of, you know, how far devotees go, are able to go according to their nature. But that's the only line of culture we have. And so, as I say, we have in ISKCON, yes, there are some Brahmanas and there are others who are would-be Brahmanas. And that's... That's what I think our movement basically is. Brahmanas and would-be Brahmanas. So it's problematic, and I don't know, we can talk about it, but I think further, you know, rectification and bringing order to ISKCON, this is a higher order. This Krishna has to step in, and this is what my belief anyway. And that's just my opinion. I know that I've recently spoke with one of my sannyasi godbrothers. He has a different opinion. We can do it. We have to write papers and you know, yeah, Maharaj. I mean, I've been hearing this for about 20 years now. You know? So I'm, you know, at this time of my life, I personally feel I have other things to do than, you know, write papers about Varnashram Dharma, you know, which I've already done. You know. And what happened, you know, just it gets read and different, like we say, you know, different opinions, you know. Well, I like this, but I don't like that. I like that, I don't like this, you know. And then what's the point? Do something practical. Now, of course, on the other side, we have to say that we see, I was talking yesterday in The Hague about Srila Prabhupada when he came back to India and he started the big preaching push there. So Srila Prabhupada was managing everything but transcendentally. He was managing by inspiration, by giving every devotee there a sense of his worth and his importance in Krishna consciousness, and following closely the activities of these devotees and consulting with them. You know, Srila Prabhupada is doing this in a very pure spiritual, that's Prabhupada, purest spiritual manner. And the devotees then, they felt, those who talk about those days, they simply felt empowered by Krishna, you know, to go out and accomplish wonderful things. And they were all disparate characters, very different types of persons. But by Prabhupada's will, by Prabhupada's grace, they were able to work together. So that's, you see, that's the thing. Prabhupada could do that, and this is the way ISKCON has, this is how ISKCON is the way it is now. That Prabhupada started things that way, but after Srila Prabhupada, we haven't seen someone who could, you know, manage. And actually Prabhupada didn't intend. That's why he formed the GBC. Prabhupada knew no one can do like that, at least for the whole movement. So, but I think it could be done now. And it is done in local situations where a local leader is very pure and spiritual, preaching nicely, inspiring the devotees nicely. Then, you see, because bhakti is natural in the heart, natural to the living entity, so one wants to serve Krishna. So if someone is representing Krishna nicely, then this this service attitude will come out in those who are there, and they will naturally cooperate. Because of the, you know, the very clear vision that this is for Krishna, this is for Lord Krishna's satisfaction. So let us work together. When that becomes kind of lost, you know, then the ego becomes stronger and we start to conflict with one another. The Prabhupada gave the example of the two sons massaging the father in a competitive spirit. So both massaging, you know, and then trying to do better, and then boom, 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 boom. And they're just doing damage to the father's body. You know, it's no longer service. So, all right, I'm going to stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.